You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where I live. IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis, Scoop. Jared Petty, Scoop. Sam Claiborne.
I fought hard for this chair.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about a dangerous new golf game.
The most dangerous game.
We're going to be talking about video game release dates.
Sounds great. We always talk about that.
But first, Valkyria Chronicles is being remastered and brought to the PlayStation 4 this spring.
Yeah. Hooray! Hooray!
Never heard of it.
I think it was President Obama that said that that game was dope as hell.
Yeah, I believe that was an Obama quote. Valkyria Chronicles was a fairly early PlayStation 3 game.
Kind of in the middle there. Yeah,
but what was it? What was
2008,
like?
I believe.
2008, 2009,
yep.
Maybe.
Yep, I think
and right this is a turn-based strategy game.
Sequel to Crystal Chronicles.
Right? No, not a sequel.
Not at all. No, not a sequel. Sequel to nothing.
Turn-based strategy game, a cult favorite, maybe,
yeah,
you'd say.
Absolutely.
Has this sort of, what is the art style? Sort of like World War II?
It's kind of a World War I steampunk, like hybrid.
World War I steampunk, cel-shaded, just absolutely gorgeous. Such a great candidate for a remake, or not a remake, a remaster. Yeah.
This is the remaster we're watching right now?
Yeah, yeah, this is the trailer for the remaster.
Now, this has been available on PC for a while, and that PC version looks real, real good.
And I believe it's on mobile, too.
I don't know about the mobile. But I do know that the PC version's gorgeous, so I think the PS4 version's just going to look lovely. The PS3 version, frankly, was maybe the best looking thing on the platform. But beyond its prettiness, it's also just a absolutely solid tactical RPG.
Have you played it?
I played it briefly.
It seems like such a Damon game.
When it first came out. But at the time, I wasn't like a big PS3 player. So I remember playing it in the office and thinking it was cool. But now I'm excited because
it's
have a PS4.
Fantastic combination of like 2D tactics, and then when you're in the field, you like place everybody and then you get to play out their turns and their actions.
Yeah.
Almost vaguely like really old school Rainbow Six-esque. I guess I never made that connection.
No, that's really good. I love that. That's a great connection. It's kind of a really immersive Final Fantasy Tactics. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a big fan of FF Tactics and Advance Wars and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And also a big fan of RTS games. And this was just
did it come out?
2008.
Okay.
And I played it and loved it, but just never got. I got distracted by other stuff and never went back to it. So this is absolutely, I'm really glad we're gonna get a second chance.
Yeah,
Coming to PS4 this spring, some people think it is one of, if not the best...
Oh, this is the bold claim that Jared made.
Best game that Sega ever produced.
No.
The words of Jared Petty.
In the words of
Jared Lee Petty were, best thing Sega ever did.
Yeah.
And then he and I had a conversation about that.
Yeah, and Sam had a really good one there on that too. But I liked Sam's assertion that there was one better.
Their taxi
thing.
Service?
No, not that. But yeah,
it's crazy.
I think this is the best Sega game. Sega's got a long legacy of wonderful games. I am not a Sega hater by
what
a long
stretch of imagination.
I like C-Man.
So this brings us to our topic of discussion. What is the best Sega game? Okay. Jared thinks it is Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah, they have this really great legacy
You thought about it a little bit over the weekend.
Yeah, they have this great history of role-playing games. We don't think of Sega really as a role-playing company, but they made, you know, this is Skies of Arcadia, Phantasy Star, Shining Force, Valkyria Chronicles. They're really good at that.
Dude, Shining Force is dope.
Shining Force and Shining Force 2 are my votes for the best game Sega's ever
produced. That's a great vote. Mm.
Yeah. So you say Shining Force 2?
Probably Shining Force 2.
Phantasy Star 4 is really good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Man, if Square would have made the Phantasy Star games, do you know how often they would come up? They would be right up there with like Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6, spoken of in the same breath.
Absolutely. If Phantasy Star 1 had had wider distribution, I mean, it was in almost every way superior to Final Fantasy, which is the game that's kind of going right now.
Whoa. But it came out at the same time. They both were inspired by Dragon Quest, because Dragon Quest is insanely popular. And then Sega was like, hey, we'll do this, but they put it on a Master System.
Yeah.
Nobody had a Master System.
Right.
4 is the one that I played. That's like, is that the one? That's the one, right?
You should play 1, 2, and 4. 4 is the best.
Yeah, Shining Force is really good. My vote Sega game ever?
Hold on, I want to touch on Shining Force briefly. If you guys haven't played Shining Force, check it out somehow. I think they're available on the Wii Virtual Console.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. Sequel to Life Force.
Nope. That's not true.
They're on mobile.
I don't think that's a great way to play them.
Because they use the Genesis controller. I mean, if it were point and click,
it should
it'd
just
be different.
Be a point. It has an on-screen D-pad, which I hate.
Yeah.
But these are turn-based strategy games, and they're huge, they're sprawling, and as you are like traveling around the countryside, you're gaining new members to your party, each new member.
Missed that on Genesis, really?
Yeah.
It's so sophisticated a 16-bit... Like, that game is incredible today in 2016, but the fact that 20 years ago they were doing stuff like that...
So that's the same era as Ogre Battle?
Roughly, yeah. I feel like Shining Force, in my mind, it's slightly earlier, but
it's more like Fire Emblem. That's
kind of like Fire Emblem.
It feels like a Fire Emblem game,
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, they're great.
Did you guys ever play Beyond Oasis on Genesis?
Yeah.
That was really
cool. Yeah.
That was like their sort of supposed to be their Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, really well done though.
That was an expensive cartridge.
That was a 20 questions game at one point.
Yeah, that was a 20 questions.
No way. Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
I would have got it.
Yeah. Didn't get Alan Wake.
Well, we can do that a third time and see if we get it. my favorite Sega thing that Sega ever did is kind of it's not really a game, but it's software. Talked to Jared about this a long time. The Sega CD came with a CD player, and it was the first way I ever had to play my own music on CD.
That was your first CD player.
And I hooked up I got a little Radio Shack amp, and I got speakers, and it had a very functional visual display, but you could do things like sequence tracks or like set things on repeat, and I was, 12, 13, listening to pop music, and I had just joined one of those Columbia CD clubs and gotten like 14 CDs, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and just like 90s standard stuff. And I just loved it. So much more in my Sega CD gaming. Like, I played CDs on it.
That was the era that like CD prices were like plummeting, too, right?
Best Buy always had like $9.99 or less for every CD. But the important thing for that was that I didn't know anybody with CD players either. They weren't around. People's parents had them sometimes, but they're $1,000. The Sega CD was, $250 or $299, I think, when it came out. Wow. And you already had a Genesis, and it had stereo output, and for hours, would just listen to music on it. It was a big deal.
If I'm not mistaken, Shining Force 3 was a Sega CD game.
That was a Sega Saturn game.
Never saw that.
Shining Force 3?
Yeah, I thought it was Saturn. I thought it came out in multiple parts.
There is a Sega CD Shining Force, but I think it's a spin-off.
Okay, not 3.
It's not actually 3. Yeah, it's a kind of a weird spin-off, if I remember right.
Man,
Shining Force was a spin-off of Shining in the Darkness.
There's that. Which is Shining's like a whole series.
A wizardry style first-person turn-based dungeon crawler.
It's weird to see the spin-off, sort of surpass the original.
Shining Force.
Yeah.
Dude, and then there's the Afterburner cabinet.
Oh, the thing that moved
around.
That
thing's awesome.
That's gonna say, the best thing Sega ever made. I'm not a huge arcade guy, so someone else would have to, but just, Virtua Cop and Crazy Taxi.
Zaxxon!
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go back that
Virtua
far.
Virtua Racing was amazing when it came out.
The Virtua Fighter games.
Right.
I don't know that they're like...
I have a Sega arcade game to submit for your... consideration.
Ooh. Golden Axe.
I really like this one.
Oh, Kongo Bongo. That's
one
right.
One of my favorite games ever. A very, very influential game in my life.
Kongo Bongo is awesome.
We just talked about Kongo. I feel like when
well,
you
Kongo Bongo
Sam.
Is significant. I know Jared can tell the story too. But the team that worked on Donkey Kong
right.
was actually outsourced by Nintendo for coding. Of course, Shigeru Miyamoto
so
designed
hard.
A bunch of stuff. The team that coded Donkey Kong was then employed by Sega to do this game.
Yeah.
So is this is as much of a sequel as Donkey Kong Jr.
Is it the same team that did Zaxxon?
Well, it's the same hardware as Zaxxon. Yeah, same
it's
cabinet.
Also isometric.
And then they have some lesser ones. Like they have this beautiful Star Trek Vector game that Sega made. Do you remember that thing?
That might be my favorite thing.
Gorgeous. That's an amazing cabinet. It's this beautiful color vector arcade game. They had the Thunderblade cabinet. Have you ever seen this thing? The non-powered, moving Thunderblade?
The helicopter game?
Yeah.
That game is awesome.
Sega's fate was sealed when Atari got Star Wars and they got Star Trek. And they never
caught
back up after that.
Never
but
recovered.
Star Trek was a really good vector game.
Yeah.
Congo Bongo. Though.
Also, it's wrong not to talk about Sega's games without talking about how great Choo Choo Rocket was with four people.
Choo Choo Rocket.
And the Dreamcast in general. Just almost everything they released for Dreamcast was at least good.
I don't think the Sonic games are very good, and I don't think Shenmue is good. Mm. So
we're getting a third one.
I would say, so my pick is going to be Virtua Tennis.
Great choice.
Virtua Tennis is one of only a handful of games that people use the expression like, oh, I lost track of time, or before I knew it, the sun was coming up. And I played Virtua Tennis at a friend's house, and that's one of the only times in my life that's literally happened to me. Like, going through the mini games and working through the challenges, and then I look up and the sun's starting to come up, and I'm like, holy crap, what just happened? Like, this game of all games is what did it to me. Usually I can only play for like 2 or 3 hours. Even the greatest games, I'm like, I just need to take a break and walk away for a little while. But that one just felt so perfect, I just stuck with it.
That's a superb video game. That's a great choice.
Honorary mention to Streets of Rage. People really like Streets of Rage.
They have a wonderful legacy. Mm-hmm. It's a proud, a lot of ways they were almost ahead of their time a lot of the times, but they just mismanaged that company so badly. They had so many chances to succeed, and they always managed to find a way to hamstring themselves. At their moment of imminent glory, they would find a way to screw themselves up.
Knights into Dreams, we didn't mention.
Fantasy
Knights.
Zone.
Knights. Fantasy Zone, great game. And Knights, jeez.
What's the 3D one, the really impressive one? Not 3D, but End Times Fantasy Zone.
Space Harrier?
Space Harrier, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Space Harrier.
Yeah, the Raster
pretty impressive.
I bag on Sega a lot on GameScoop, but I was actually a Sega kid growing up, I always got the Sega stuff first and then the Nintendo stuff. Years, I didn't have a SNES till I think the PS1 era.
2010.
Yeah, I know. But it was like, I think I got the PS1 and Super Nintendo the same year and caught up on all the Super Nintendo classics. So I have a lot of fondness for all of Sega's stuff.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating maybe, and one of the reasons that it sounds like we're picking on Sega is because Sonic is their symbol and Sonic's so popular. But there are 50 Sega games that are better than Sonic or Sonic 2, which are probably the best Sonic games. And I think that's where it becomes frustrating. So, like, there's this incredibly broad legacy, but we narrow it down to that one marketing gimmick they created, and that's frustrating.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. This week we found out about a new game from former Burnout developers, formed the new studio Three Fields Entertainment, and they're making a game called Dangerous Golf.
This is the first I've heard of this, Dan.
Yeah?
Is this a sequel to Ninja Golf?
I don't know, but we've talked before. We like video game golf.
Yeah,
we like Mario Golf.
Do you remember
like
how there's an Aqua Teen Hunger Force golf game?
I didn't. No. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we need to find this game and play.
Okay, Dangerous Golf from former Burnout devs. It's coming out in May for console and PC.
Wow.
And it says they say it is as serious.
Oh, that looks so cool.
They say it's on Unreal Engine 4. They say it's as serious a golf game as Burnout was a serious simulation.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's such a great games. Great quote.
Yeah. So we're talking about people that designed pre-Burnout Paradise Burnout.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming...
Because that's a very different type of game. It's like a puzzle game with physics.
Yeah. They also worked on Black, these guys. So they want to take the destruction from Black.
That's what I was going to say, is knowing nothing about this game other than the conversation we just had and this screenshot.
Yep. You're like, all right.
I'm going to go ahead and extrapolate. Here's what I'm going to guess. Is it's got a normal, hit the ball and try to bounce it off stuff and get it in the whole, arcadey golf. But I bet it also has, a cool destruction mode use your ball to, cause as much damage as you can. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a couple of cool things there. I think
I'm totally on
gimmick
board.
Golf games can be great. I joked about it, but Atari 7800 Ninja Golf, we were just talking about that
Kirby's
game this
Dream
morning.
Course?
I was just going to say, Kirby, I'm a huge fan of gimmick golf games.
Yeah, it's great. You would hit the ball to the hole, and then you have to have a side-scrolling ninja battle to get to where your ball landed.
Yeah.
And then the boss fights were giant dragons hovering over the green. It was great. There was, what was that one that was like a launch title for Wii? That was really fun too. It was kind of a gimmicky, explosive golf game. Do you remember that? Cutesy Graphics? What was that called?
I think it was made by Camelot too.
I really liked it. But it was this kind of thing, kind of a gimmick, like super-powered golf game.
Did you ever play Rivet King?
No.
What's that? It's a really cool gimmick golf game. It's great.
For what?
PS2 or PS1?
Oh,
Rivet King is, oh man, that's such a deep cut, but there's like two people listening to GameScoop that are like,
Rivet King! You brought Kirby's Dream Course.
Look up a video of it. It's great.
That's Dangerous good. Golf. So a little bit of description of the game said, you're not striving for par or aiming for birdie. You're playing for dollar damage as your high score. You're awarded points for trick shots and ricochet techniques.
Love
and
it.
For destroying stuff, turn your golf ball into a bomb, set off your smash breaker. Destructive powers increase as the ball heats up, and there are indoor environments.
This sounds like it's made for YouTube videos.
Yeah. Well, and I also love, just like in Burnout, I love, like, the horse aspect of it. Like, here's what I did, now you take your turn and see if you can cause even more damage.
Yep. Also have on and offline multiplayer.
Yeah.
Pretty dangerous. Dangerous Golf coming this May.
IGN, 11 out of 10.
11 out of 10.
Yeah. Was that the was that the release date discussion?
No. But... Speaking of a release date discussion, Mighty No. 9 has been delayed for a third time.
Yeah.
And it's just basically been delayed indefinitely. It has no new release date this time.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be out in February, and now they're just like, we got to keep working on it. It'll be out when it's done.
Mm-hmm. It's such baloney.
Yeah.
Well, their excuse was they're adding these networking features and functions. And so it's that, and they said that, and they said because they're releasing on so many platforms that, like, it's challenging for really... Which I'm sensitive to, like, yeah, you know, Vita and Wii and just across the board all these platforms, and with a small team that can be tough. But I also, here's the thing that frustrates me or makes me a little angry about this news, is they announced in January, a month before the release date, an indefinite delay. I'm like, dude, you guys knew before now.
Mm-hmm.
They must have known, what, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months ago that they weren't going to be
releasing. What was the other
game
that Inafune announced and is working on? Yeah, it was supposed to come out this
Castlevania.
Year.
Castlevania.
Bloodline?
Yeah.
No, Blood is in the title. You're talking about Red Dust, Red something.
Yeah, Blood in the title. It's a sci-fi with a dog. There's like a robot dog. And we got little paper cutout things at E3 for them.
My ignorance shines forth.
Recore.
Oh, wait, Recore, not the red thing. Okay, I was thinking about the other one. That's
I was thinking of the Igarashi game.
So was I.
Yeah. Oh, you thinking Igarashi?
We both made the same mistake.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, Recore is another game that also got delayed, but like I can't believe it's even close to coming out because it was just debuted at E3.
It feels very disingenuous a month before a game's release date to have an indefinite delay and claim like, oh, we're just need more. Like you don't need that much more time when you're a month away. Like they just knew they weren't a month away forever ago. It's frustrating.
All that said, and I think it's a absolutely correct point you're making. I am glad that they delayed it rather than release it incomplete, which occasionally happens.
Do you think it'll have a Wily's Castle?
But that'd be amazing if it did. Only if it has that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-thing.
I love the map screen. Only on Wily's Castle.
Yeah.
It's like they give you the map screen there, going through, and you're like, oh yeah, I did kind of just go through that area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I personally don't think that this looks up to Mega Man standards. I don't know.
What I've played of it, I've really liked.
This delay prompted a GameScoop fan to write into us. I believe it's their first time writing in. This is Big Tony style.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't heard from him in a while.
I say, at what point before a game is released do you think developers should announce a release date? I asked this after noticing Mighty No. 9's second delay. They are deciding to hold off on an official release date until they are sure. Makes you wonder why they even decided to announce dates before when they were not able to hit them.
Damon, are you Big Tony style?
I've met Big Tony style.
Have you? Is he big?
He's a nice man. He's not big.
Oh, that's
you've met him. But have you ever?
I may have met
seen
him too.
He and
I
in the same room together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. No, I guess it's not me.
I was just reading an old piece. Have you ever read the last days of Fallout 2? Or not Fallout 2, jeez, I can't remember how to talk, Half-Life 2, pardon me. You know, the
Final Hours?
Right, Final Hours of Half-Life 2, which is actually about like the last year of its development after that huge delay.
Yes.
That's a wonderful piece, but it
Jeff
does...
Keighley.
Yeah, it does offer some, if I knew the title of it, I could have remembered the author. It does offer some insight into how even the best of intentions can go terribly awry in this process. I like to be forgiving on it. I do think that when you're getting that close, you should be a little more transparent.
And they're kickstarted. That's another reason to be transparent.
Yeah.
In terms of what, like, well, I think to get to heart of Big Tony style question, for a big AAA action game, it makes sense to announce your release date far in advance because it's a little bit like summer movies. Like, you don't want Call of Duty and Halo coming out on the same day. So they put their stake in the ground and say, here's when our stuff's dropping. You know, we're Fallout. Tomb Raider, you can launch on this day if you want, but you might want to, you know, move a week or two.
I didn't.
But for a smaller game, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit mixed up. I don't know any clear advantage to, you know, months ago saying, yep, we're releasing on this day. Like, why do that to yourself?
Well, a lot of people point to Fallout 4 for the ideal way to do it. Announce at E3, ship in November.
Yeah.
I point to George R.R. Martin.
Do you?
Yeah. He has always said when it's done, it'll be done.
The
but
Mighty
then
Number
his publisher has put the release dates
the
on.
The Mighty Number 9 of the book world, has to say.
Yes, that's what they've always said.
Well, all right then. You know.
No, I mean, I just thought.
A Song of Iceman and Fireman.
That's pretty good.
There you go.
Flame Man.
That's pretty good.
Flame?
That's pretty good. There's several of them.
Do you think developers should try and hold their release date until the game is just about finished and ready to go?
The other end of it is we don't know what the publishers and the platforms are requiring of them, too. I mean, it may be that for one of these multiple platforms that they were releasing on, they had to arrange it ahead of time. That's possible. So they went ahead and made a release date announcement because of that.
Yeah.
We don't know that end of it. So it's hard for me to say, but ideally, that 4-month window is pretty great. Yeah. I mean, that's the way to do it. Ooh, game, it's coming out. Somebody in the office speculates, I don't remember who, they like to joke that, and maybe Dan, that Half-Life 3 one day is just going to appear on Steam.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I totally think that's how Valve will do
that. Would be amazing.
There's only a few companies that can get away with it. Yeah, I mean, I think, I kind of think it's a miracle that video games get made at all. They just feel impossibly complex, and all the disciplines they bring together, from design to art to music to voice and all the rest of it, and then all the partners that you have to partner with to get it on their digital stores. Like, I do, I run features at IGN, so I deal farther out than most people. Like, I work on big projects that talk to, you know, product and editorial and video and foreign offices, and like, that's really, really, that's such a tiny thing compared to making a giant, you know, many, many hour long video game that I don't know how you can see into your crystal ball and know where you're going to be in 12 months. Like, it feels impossible to me.
Yeah, there must be
some
other purpose.
Every time it even happens.
There must be some other purpose for a release date. Maybe it's just to get another press release out or something. I don't know.
Well,
because I've been trained not to pay attention to them. I just don't. Since Zelda 2, right?
That's true. That was a giant lie. They're like, keep looking for it. It's out there somewhere, maybe. And in Canada,
the chip shortage. Yeah. But every Zelda game has always said, "Here's the window it's coming out in," and then 2 years later, it's still not out.
Yeah, I think we were.
So
we were
I don't care anymore.
We were talking about doing an infographic where, like, I think literally every Zelda game's been delayed.
That's amazing.
Or that might not be true, but like it's famous. Like it's a franchise famous for its delays. I think part of it is internal. Like, this is you telling your team, like, yo, guys, this is the day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, keep working. Like, you need to give people those deadlines in order to eventually just stop tinkering with stuff.
Fight against feature creep and just be like, we're going to lock this down.
There is plenty else to play while we wait for Mighty Number 9.
Yeah. Woohoo! My goodness gracious, there is.
Next email comes from Jason. And he says,
Jason,
I tried to tweet Jared about this a few days ago.
Did I not respond?
You can CC me, I'm his boss.
Don't think I got my point across effectively. Do you remember hearing from Jason on Twitter?
I've heard from a few people on Twitter recently. I don't know.
I wanted to make sure my point was heard accurately.
All right.
Whoa. I don't know if we want to enable this.
I think that games media
Jared,
sometimes...
Jared, now's your chance just to walk out of
It's nothing bad. I think that games media sometimes ignores a population that listens and reads every day. I am 37, father of two, under 10. I'm a husband, a farmer, and a gamer.
Cool.
Between getting up at 5:30 in the morning to start ironing everyone's clothes and packing lunches and getting the morning chores done.
Wait, good looking kids.
Running any errands that need to be done, getting back home to get some work done, then lunch, then work, then pick up kids, then teach horseback riding, then cook dinner, then possibly dance class or 4-H, then baths, then bedtime, I might begin to play a game at this point.
This guy's way past 140 characters already.
Yeah, you need a 3DS.
I don't care for Fallout 4 because I don't have 100 plus hours to dedicate to a game, whereas Uncharted is a nice 10-ish hours and tells a beautiful story, all compact-like.
Yeah.
There's a population of us out there that would like that dad perspective every now and then.
I remember this guy now. I just didn't know what to write back in a Twitter-sized window.
We would love to be heard and told to look into buying certain things and not. I love the excitement that the 20-somethings and early 30-year-olds bring, but it isn't my voice. I don't have the ability to buy a bunch of games that sound awesome and sandbag them till I have time later. I have the ability to buy, say, 5 games a year at most. One of them has to be Infinity, whatever, because my daughters, and maybe a Wii U game that we both might enjoy, like Wind Waker. So were you talking about how you prefer longer games or something?
No, I don't remember what this came from. I remember I remember him writing to me now, and I think I wrote him back and thanked him to talk about it. It's always good to hear people looking
thank
for
you
new different
your
things.
Concern.
No, not just that. The fact is, he's got a very valid point. We want to try to cater to all kinds of people who play games. I mean,
Justin should be able to speak to the dad gamer.
Well, is he asking to get recommendations for games, or is he just?
I think he's just asking that we keep in mind as we're talking about games and recommending them that not everyone is looking for a gigantic 100+ hour Witcher 3.
It can absolutely be a negative more than a positive.
Sure,
100%.
But I mean, that's go ahead, Justin.
As a father.
Yeah.
I have so much more appreciation. So I started as a mobile guy at IGN, and then I stopped. I didn't play mobile games for a couple of years when that wasn't my job anymore. And I picked it back up when I had my daughter. The 3DS, like Sam mentioned, and iPad have just been a lifesaver, and I do much, much more gaming there. And that's how I get my fix of, I want to solve a puzzle and have fun and stay plugged into, the world of video games, but I can't necessarily play. I'm doing better this year, but like last year I just missed all those AAA open world games because there was no time to fit that in my life. So I would recommend that to Jason, first of all. If mobile's not your thing, I know it's not, everybody likes that flavor. The 3DS and Vita are strong, strong consoles. Mm. I would also say there's a website, How Long to Beat. I don't know if it's howlongtobeat.com. If you just Google How Long to Beat, it'll turn up. And it's all crowdsourced data where you say, I played The Witcher 3 and it took me 40 hours to beat it, and it's run in like such an OCD way, and I mean that in a way that like I love the way it's put together, that it's like, because I'm like, but wait a second, how long to like 100% it? And it's got that stat too, and it's like, but what if I'm really fast and just blast through it? How long? So it'll tell you like, just blast through the story, 12 hours. It'll take the average person 16 hours. If you want 100% it, it'll take you 25 hours. And I totally reference that website before I start, a weird random game like, this is a deep cut, but do you remember the Ghostbusters game that came out last gen with the original voice actors?
Yeah.
I had that game in my Steam library, and just on a whim, I was like, huh. But I used How Long to Beat, and I'm like, oh, it's 7 hours long. Totally, And if it would have said 14, I probably wouldn't have picked it up.
I think that what he was asking also was, what are we here at IGN interested in doing about that? I mean, the recommendations you're making are good. And I think we do, to a point, cover those kinds of products with reviews and guides in particular for shorter games. I think about something like Oxenfree, for example, or that Dragon Cancer, or some of the other things we looked at. But
Firewatch.
But integrating that suggestion, hey, you don't have a lot of time, I do think we could do more around that. Actually, that idea that he planted there, I haven't figured out what to do with in games yet, but I just pitched a feature to Miranda, anime related to that. We haven't talked about this yet. So.
So you pitched to Miranda now?
Yeah. Well, she does the anime stuff, so I ran it by her first. But a sort of an anime thing for people who don't have a lot of time and still enjoy the medium.
No, for sure. Like, that's a real, I watch, One Piece is the only anime that I watch, and it's like 500 episodes at this point, so I would never recommend it to anybody. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you really like it? Should I watch it? I'm like, no.
Well, do you have a year?
Yeah, it'll take literally so long. Like, don't bother.
So we do care, a lot of us, that's our lives. I do a lot of my gaming on the bus. On handheld or on PC late at night.
Justin, I nominate you as executive editor of our dad gaming coverage.
Great, I'm down. The last piece of this puzzle that I want to touch on is that...
You have puzzles on the mind lately. Playing too much Witness.
There's no such thing as too much Witness.
I think there is.
It's really a pet peeve of mine, and it's bothered me in an informal way, and I think I might try to formalize it here at IGN, is that I really dislike praising a game for being big. Mm. It's like, well, so what? That's a meaningless... Like, you praise a game for being good or fun.
I disagree with that, because when I was a kid, it meant a whole lot to me. When I got Final Fantasy and I realized that there is games that were 50, 60 hours long, that changed my life.
Well, I'm not saying don't note that it's big, but I'm just saying it shouldn't explicitly be a plus. Like, I feel like most modern games have about 20 hours of good idea stretched out into 40 hours of game. Like, they wear out their welcome. Like, I don't beat games anymore. I just eventually peter
out.
Just
play until you feel like you've gotten
it. I'll play until I got my fill and then stop. And I understand the perspective of someone that only gets a couple games a year, but I don't think that makes it a better product.
I think we should note when it's big, and I absolutely agree that a lot of them are stretched out. I do think we should praise when a game is both big and consistently good throughout. When that does take place, that is something to
sing from the heavens. The games we praise are generally playground sandbox games that are big. So it's like you can do one thing in them and have a shorter game, but the fact that they built all this other stuff to do, that's when you praise the size of the game when it's fun to do. If it's genuinely big and there's a lot to do but you don't have to do it all, that's something to praise because it means that the person investing their hard-earned money into one game is really getting a good deal for it.
Yeah, I understand that perspective. For me, the example is Fallout, where in the beginning, I went into every building and explored every dungeon, and I'm like, okay, I'm either going to find raiders or super mutants or ghouls, and those are the three things, or possibly, creatures. Mm-hmm. Those are the four things you're going to fight, and you're going to do it 100 times. And, I stopped. I'm like, I don't want to.
500 times, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to go in this building anymore because it's going to have raiders in it.
I had a very different experience with Fallout, but I may be in the minority on that. I mean, yes, I found them. I just didn't mind. I play Fallout for the environments much more than for the enemies. And so I kept finding really neat things that made me happy hidden around the world. And I care less about what I'm fighting while I'm doing it. There's actually, if you take the Fallout guide and look at all the enemy classes, there's more than you realize there. That's another part that struck me. There was a lot more variety in Fallout than it seems when you're playing Fallout.
Rat scorpions are terrifying.
They are.
They're Fallout really bad. 4.
We have a Fallout podcast that I really recommend GameScoop fans check out called Vault IGN.
We do. We have one of those.
Jared hosts it. It's very popular, and it's popular because it's very good. So check that out.
Well, thanks, Sam.
I shouldn't have to plug your damn podcast for you.
Oh, that was nice of you.
See how I turned that around?
I did.
That was pretty good.
I should mention, too, that
give me my chair.
You should have Brandon Tyrell in there because he picked up everything in every single place he went into when he started playing that game.
Okay, so we invited Brandon on the show.
We don't need. Let's.
I know.
This,
I'm just
this
saying.
For another
I want to hear that story.
We need to move on.
I want to hear that story.
This show. It is time to play Video Game 20 Questions.
Ah!
Everyone knows how this works.
I don't know how it works.
My panel has 20 yes or no questions to guess this week's mystery game, which was suggested by Sean Hannon.
Okay.
We may begin.
Okay. Not Sean Hannity, Sean Hannon. Right.
Okay. Not Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannon, the hand cannon.
Okay. Yes.
Do you play this game? Is your character on foot? Are they running on their feet?
Okay.
Just ask if it's Alan Wake.
It's Octodad.
It's Octodad.
Your character is very abstract in this game.
That's not a yes or no question. You just have to give us the answer to the
game now.
We won on one question.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Okay. So we just won't.
So that's a freebie.
I bet it's Kicks.
I'll just give you a freebie.
Wow, that's a big freebie.
What's that, Kicks? That would be amazing. Yeah, you're just a little thing drawing squares. Right. That's a great game. Such a good
Kicks
game.
Kicks is a great game.
Yeah, I just got Kicks for Christmas.
It'd be amazing if you guessed Kicks right now.
No, I'm sticking with Octodad. Was it released prior to January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay.
No.
Sam's host.
Sam only knows old games.
No, I know
you
new
play
games.
All the new games, but they're not lodged in my memory in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, was it made after 2010?
No.
Okay, so it's falling in that one.
Okay.
I just remembered I wanted to change how that works. I was going to start doing it by console generation instead of year, because then we have to always narrow it down to things that overlap.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
Okay. I've been thinking about this a lot. I have some good questions.
So did this game come out in the PS3, 360 era?
Yes.
It's probably a PC or handheld game.
Yeah. Or could be that Wii though. Could be that Wii.
I think it's probably a PC or handheld game.
Is this game depicted from a third person perspective?
It's every extend extra. Extreme.
It's not clear.
It's not clear whether it's from third person?
Yeah.
But you play as an abstract thing, so it's not.
But it's still third person. That would mean you're outside looking in. Like, I mean, you're either inside looking out or outside looking like in, right?
If it's like something, again, like, so like Kicks, let me ask this. Third person?
Is Tetris played from a first person or third person perspective?
Well, I'm not the block, so I would figure.
Is this a puzzle game?
Yes.
All right.
Cool. That's fine.
All right.
That's a good one.
Oh, man. Okay, so we got that.
Man, I wish it was, okay.
Good puzzle games from that generation. Let's see, we had Boom Blocks. We had
Boom Blocks is dope.
Yeah,
but that has a perspective.
It does have a perspective.
We always go to Boom Blocks on this. I don't know why. But there's Meteos.
I got one.
Meteos and what's the PlayStation version? Luminous.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna guess Luminous. Is this game famous for its soundtrack?
No.
Okay.
Not Luminous. Possibly Meteos.
Is the game popular on a handheld?
I think. Well, you say handheld.
Phone. Oh. It's a phone game.
Ah.
Yeah.
Is this a mobile game?
It is a mobile game.
Okay.
Right. Was it on iPhone? Should we just burn that one too? Can we ask that?
Sure.
I don't know if it was on iPhone.
iPod.
Apple devices.
Or Apple devices.
If you're asking if it was on Apple devices, sure. Yeah, okay. Say yes to that.
Apple so an devices. iPad only?
iPad puzzle game?
Mobile right. puzzle games.
Justin, but have fun.
Well, but what's weird about this is he said...
You can take this one, buddy.
He said before 2010.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the iPhone has been around.
Yeah, but like barely. Like that makes it like a...
It's... So first of all, I never said it was mobile only.
Uh-huh.
And it's when you asked if it was before 2010, I was referring to its original release date.
Okay.
Oh,
so originally released, then ported to iOS. Puzzle game.
Yeah, the iOS is a trap. Don't get hung up on that.
Yeah, right. So
it's something that... Zuma?
Yeah, exactly. Like
threes.
Yeah, no, what was the other one?
Peggle.
Actually, I was just
Peggle's good.
Damon's favorite game.
Does it have Ode to Joy in it?
No.
No, you already asked if it was famous for its music.
Well, yeah, but I mean that'd be a stretch for Peggle.
So yeah,
Peggle's a.
Does this game involve blocks?
No.
Ooh, that's a really good question. Let's narrow down the puzzle.
That's 10.
That's great.
Does this game involve orbs or circles?
Kind of. Yeah.
Does it involve physics?
Yes.
Osmos?
Oh, I love Osmos.
That's 12.
Let's see, orbs and circles. I don't play a lot of puzzle games, so I'm in trouble here.
I wish it was Peggle.
Yep. So, but it doesn't feature Ode to Joy, so it's not a Peggle game.
In physics. It's
about little balls. There's physics involved.
Well, he said the little balls are involved.
Yeah.
Did we already ask 2D versus 3D? I keep picturing 2D.
No, you can ask that. We asked perspective, which didn't make sense.
Yeah,
so is this
a 2D game?
It's a 2D game.
It's a 2D game. Not famous for its soundtrack. Appeared on iOS. Did you ever confirm the handheld thing? Or?
Yeah, he said it's
not a handheld game. It's not on like a...
So if it ended up on iOS, eventually it's either PC or a console game. Gosh, I just do not play a lot of puzzle games. Really in trouble. Just like Woody Pop, Columns.
Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah.
I know. I'm trying to think of like an art style question or something like that.
Yep.
Or does it have sequels?
No.
No sequels. The only one.
Ooh.
Jeez.
That makes it so much harder.
Let's see.
This game appear on Xbox Live Arcade?
No. That's 15.
Wow. So it didn't.
15? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I feel like we were just at 5 and narrowed down to puzzle and then we got hung up.
So it's either Wii or PS3 most likely that it was ported from, or PC. It could be a Flash game of some kind. I mean, do you think if I asked if it was originally a Flash game that would be a waste or not, guys?
I couldn't name a lot of games based on that. I mean, there's this...
That doesn't help me.
I think physics runner game. And
yeah, I think of Bejeweled.
For the panel's information,
Bejeweled's pretty good.
I would never pick a Flash game to play for video game 20 questions.
Okay, so it's not Bejeweled. All right, so let's see.
And it's too abstract to be Angry Birds and stuff like that.
Yeah. It features balls.
Features orbs.
And physics.
Orbs,
physics.
That could be Bejeweled. Right.
It could be, but Bejeweled was a Flash game.
Bejeweled also isn't physics. Yeah. Well, I guess in the sense of
Things
fall.
Yeah, things fall. That's where I was thinking.
The things fall down from the top of the screen in this game. Like, is that the mechanic?
No.
Oof. Oh, we're failing here, guys.
Do we know what this game is?
Yes. I won't count that question.
Okay.
All kinds of abstract things.
You know, could Candy Crush have come out back then, or something famous like that that's famous now?
No,
because that would have
Yep. Let's see.
You know, it is a physics-based puzzle game.
Yep.
Originally released in 2008. Came to...
We didn't know 2008.
Oh,
sorry. You know, it was before... I spoiled that for you. It was before. It was originally released before 2010.
Fruit Ninja?
No, it's not.
It's not a puzzle game.
Why not?
Well, Fruit Ninja is more of a reactive game than a puzzle game.
But it's from that era.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing I'm really picturing from that era and why this is tripping me up is I'm only picturing like 360 games. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to picture like PSP or DS or like PC puzzle games.
Did this game appear on Wii?
Yes.
Okay. So it was on Wii. That helps.
That does help.
Okay, so let's see. Zach and Wiki is an adventure puzzle game.
What are some of the Brain Age era games that are like brain?
Yeah, but he said it wasn't a handheld though.
No, he didn't.
Actually,
you just
did,
said it was on DS.
I did say that.
Oh, no. No, he said it's on Wii.
Oh, Wii. That's
yeah, it's on Wii.
That doesn't exclude it. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, well, he said earlier.
I said it was not a handheld.
You told me that.
Okay.
So this thing appeared on Wii. Jeez.
And Boomblox wasn't ported to other stuff? That's not abstract.
Boomblox is not on mobiles.
Well, it is kind of abstract.
Yeah, I don't think Boomblox was ever ported to mobile. And Boomblox had a sequel, so it can't be that either. This didn't have a sequel.
Did Nintendo make this game?
No.
Okay.
I guess maybe that was a dumb question.
It's not Mercury.
Like a third party Wii game?
They don't do stuff like that.
Yeah, there were a lot of third party Wii games it could have been. Mm-hmm.
Especially physics based ones.
Yeah.
So it's not like Monkey Ball.
Oh, what? The goopy one.
Yeah.
World of Goo?
The World of Goo.
It's World of Goo.
Valve's Orbs.
It's World of Goo.
Yeah.
Is it World of Goo?
Yes.
The goopy one! The goopy one!
19 questions. That was a close one.
Goodness. That's an excellent game.
The Wii was essential to know that because it was a Wii game that I associate with that game with.
Yeah, see,
it came to Wii and PC, I think, at the same
game.
Time.
I played that game on mobile and again.
It came to
PC.
Mobile in 2010.
Orbs and Physics.
That was a Wii game for me. Yeah.
Orbs physics is kind based. Of a. I mean, I guess I. Understand.
I mean, he asked if it involved spheres or orbs, and I was like, kind of.
Yeah, that was good. Thanks for the 2008 clue. I was like,
that was developed by what, 2D Boy? I don't know what they went on to do after.
I don't know either. Because there was never a sequel.
I kind of want to go look them up now. Yeah. Well, I know that they did. They started like the indie fund and funded other indie products, but I don't know what they're actually developing.
They're making Fallout 5.
Could be.
Yeah, that's a really cool game. So, like, you understand, like, when you ask if your character,
totally
has legs.
You're totally right.
You're like a goth girl in that game.
Maybe not.
There's like a little plot about the factory town, and you're like a.
Yeah, it's probably better answered the way he did, though. We'd have been totally lost trying to
get... You're a goth girl in this
side-scroller.
I think there's like a...
Goth girl side-scroller.
Tim Burton-type family that the game supports.
You're thinking of American McGee's
No, Alice. You're right, but I guess I don't... When I don't think about you as being that person when you're building up the goo towers and stuff. Like, I feel like that's separate from like the little story that's happening.
So, Jared, is World of Goo played from a first-person or third-person perspective?
I would think of it as a third-person perspective.
I would as well, but I agree that it's kind of a stretch.
This is hurting my head. What's the name of the weird little SNES puzzle game where the girl has the hook and like swings around, or the Super Famicom one? Do you guys remember that?
That could be first-person because the reticle is on the screen.
Where's that?
Super Hook Girl.
I think I'm siding with Damon on that's unanswerable.
Yeah, it's good. No, Damon was in a hard place.
You don't see your character, so it can't be third-person.
Also, we will never have a Flash game, so which means we will never have Choo Choo Rocket.
Choo Choo Rocket.
Full screen here.
I bet World of Goo was a Flash game. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
What, World of Goo? It might have been a Flash.
Yeah, I actually think World of Goo.
Flash game?
Maybe.
It didn't start as a Flash
game. It's hard to tell. In that era, Flash is just a way to create a game at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't just mean browser-based. That's how we should have narrowed it down.
All right, I think that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.